Are you ready to ignite your business and achieve your full potential? Welcome to Building Success Stories, the podcast that empowers entrepreneurs and business leaders. I'm Ann Donnelly, and I've spent over four decades in the business world. I've witnessed firsthand the power of perseverance, innovation, and strategic thinking. On this podcast, we'll explore the stories of successful entrepreneurs and business leaders, and we'll delve into the practical strategies and mindset shifts that can propel your business to new heights. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools you need to build a thriving business. I'm here today at Strategic Emergency Training and Consulting with the two owners, Ryan McConkie and Travis Dunkley. So nice to be here today. Thank you. Why don't you start just telling me a little bit about the business, how you got started, and what you're doing now?
We've been in business just over 5 years. It was 5 years in June. We actually incorporated in the middle of the pandemic, which everybody thought was kind of insane. The business kind of was born out of a sister company, the Travis owns, that was doing event medical work. And in the winter time, some of our folks were looking for something to do. So we discussed training. Let's do training in the winter, right? Everybody's indoors. So Travis asked me to look into that, and we started going down that path. And we did our first class, and it was in January in a snowstorm up here at Glens Falls at a dive shop that was up here. We were in their basement. We had six people, and we kind of kicked that off, and that was sort of the start of it. And that was originally for the other company. And then as things started to get legs, and we talked, we wanted to spin it off, give myself ownership, equity in the company. Things being done. So that's sort of how we were born. The building that we're sitting in today, that kind of fell into our lap, I think, August of that year. Our initial thought was we work out of our houses, rent hotel space. That gets expensive very, very quickly because you have every single class, it's several hundred dollars. So we started looking and we found this space pretty quickly. When we came in here, it was like an apartment white. It hadn't been occupied in a while. So we went through it. We painted every square inch. We've done a whole bunch of improvements over the last couple of years. There's a full classroom downstairs that you haven't seen yet. So we offer quite a bit right out of this building.
That's great. So you started off doing what types of training?
So I actually started off, I'm doing CPR AED first aid training, and we were doing it for a brand that was called ASHI. It was the American Safety and Health Institute. They had a couple of different brands. They eventually merged them all together, and they're now called HSI. But that's how we got started with our instructors. I was an instructor trainer, so I was able to do classes. And then probably 6 to 8 months later, we started looking into the Red Cross because of some contracts. We got set up to do Red Cross, and then eventually American Heart Association. So those are our three primary. We can also do National Safety Council. And there's a lesser known brand called ECSI. It's the Emergency Care and Safety Institute. We really don't get a lot of requests for it, but we can do it if somebody wants us to.
Are you dealing with businesses and individuals?
So we do both. So we run, I guess, what you would call community classes in a sense out of a number of locations, including this office. So we post those publicly through the American Red Cross website. Anybody in the public can find those classes and sign up. They come here. Typically, they're blended. So they do a bunch of the classwork online, and they come in here for a review session, and we test their skills out. We also, though, have businesses that come to us on a routine basis. Industry, mining, you pretty much name the industry we do in healthcare. Hey, we've got a group of 10 people. We need to get trained. One of the biggest challenges that we discussed at the beginning of this is the certifications are good for 2 years. So you get a customer and you don't see them again for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's really almost a 4 to 5 year cycle to get the repeat business in the door. So it's been quite the hustle over the last, 3 to 5 years to keep finding new clients to keep that pipeline going.
Because it has to be kind of local, like within 30, 40 miles.
We get students from Vermont. We get students as far as Plattsburgh, Burlington that'll come down here. There's not a lot of opportunity in the North Country. And really, the next closest is the Red Cross in Albany. Again, the Red Cross is our biggest one. We have locations in Syracuse, rented locations, but we run classes in Syracuse. We have two in Long Island. We actually have our own co-working space in North Haven, Connecticut, Springfield, Mass. And I think those are all the locations right now.
The population's there and they need you. You can set up, you just team up with a partner with someone down there or rent
So because we are in those areas, we actually sought out instructors in those areas. So pretty much all of our instructors are independent contractors. So if somebody in Connecticut says, hey, I need a class, we have instructors in Connecticut. One of us can go if it's a big enough class, or our local instructor can go.
Mm-hmm. Our best to keep the instructors in the community that they live in, give them the opportunity to work in it, because they know their community better than we can. Right? Mm-hmm. And what's better than have a member of your community being your instructor?
So it's a great way to expand. So do you have any other areas you're kind of looking at moving into?
New Hampshire is an area that we're trying to look into. New Hampshire is very kind of wide and sprawling.
Yeah.
It's really kind of the ones that I want to touch base in. We're also looking at kind of a mid-state area, so like Wakestown, New York. And we had some success in Montgomery, but we also had some failures there.
County.
It's on your way to New York City, mm-hmm. so it's kind of in the middle. It's pretty easy to get to, but there's not a big population. So the old school drive through towns, right? Like if you don't need something off of that exit, you're never going to go off
right.
that exit. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we do is also on location training as well. So a lot of the larger organizations will actually charge to have an instructor come on site. For smaller organizations, it's hard to get to that point where you're actually doing on-site training to begin with. And then when you agree to a fee and then they slip on, you know, we're going to charge a fee to have the instructor come to you. We do our best to not have that. You know, the other day, we want the relationship. I'd much rather train your team every 3 months, every 2 years, than see you once and have you always looking for the next more affordable option where you can build that relationship and you can say, hey, Ryan, or hey, Travis, we just brought on 5 more people. Is there any way that we can get a class up and running the next 14 days so everybody's safe? Those are relationships that we want to build. We don't want to just check a box. We want to be your partner in training for the long term. And that's kind of our goal. And the fact that we're first responder own and manage 90% of our workforce is first responders at some level, I think shows that we practice what we preach. Our vehicles have AEDs in them. Mm-hmm. Our buildings have AEDs in them. If you go to any of our training locations where you have access to an AED, I think that shows that we do this because we actually care. We want to give the best training possible, but we don't have a second chance to train you. So that initial class or that refresher class is our opportunity to prepare you to be in the world. And we want to do everything we can as instructors.
So you're really passionate about what you do. It's not just a job. It's your ethos. Be prepared.
As Travis said, most of us are first responders and have lived in this world. I've been a firefighter since I was 17 years old. I was actually out with the fire department today doing a bunch of stuff. So was an EMT for an extremely long time, you know, did some law enforcement reserve work. I was in the military. We've got folks that are, you know, nurses, paramedics, retired military, kind of name it. A good majority of our contract force, for whatever reason, has gravitated to us is service oriented. So everybody's really kind of passionate.
So, and you've actually had to encounter these situations because I just got training and the person that did the training said he'd never actually used and had to use an AED.
That is a struggle that we see in the instructor community. And not saying that any instructor is better than one instructor, but how do you have that conversation with a student not knowing what it's like to actually be in that emergency situation and utilize these skills under pressure? And I think that's one of the things that our instructors have. I don't want to say it's an advantage, but a better understanding of that younger student. Our favorite students, our catchphrases, our favorite students are the ones that come because they want to, not because they have to. And I truly believe that. Those are the students that really resonate. But when you have an instructor that's never actually put hands on a chest in an emergency situation under stress, I think it changes the understanding of the student and the way the instructor presents the information, because you don't know what that experience is like. And there's so many wise tales about, you know, if you do CPR, you're going to break their ribs. Well, even if you do, you won't know that you did it. You'll puncture their lung. Well, even if you did, you won't know that you did it. And we're just going to keep trucking along. I think that's the big community thing that we try to teach in our classes is, well, you're not going to know if you did it. You did anyways, so it doesn't matter. The worst thing that we can do, and one of the things that we see in our classes over and over again, the absolutely worst thing you can do in a situation is just nothing. Everything else you do is correctable. It's the just doing nothing. And we see that more in the communities because we become so social media, claim to fame driven, that individuals are much faster to grab a camera and record what's going on and not be a part of the solution. And we offer classes as well. So new parents, or parents that haven't had young ones in the house in a long time, or grandparents, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, they can reach out to us and say, hey, we're adding to our family and we'll do a hands-only CPR class completely free of charge. So while we are, at the end of the day, a for-profit organization, that's what keeps the doors open. That also gives us the ability to do free things for the community, train new parents and how to do hands-only CPR and choking obstruction, do Narcan classes, do severe hemorrhage control, formerly also known as the Stop the Bleed program, free of charge on request for our community members. We do that because we care about, we live here. A perfect example, I did 1,300 miles in the last 48 hours inspecting AEDs for a large organization. We found several AEDs that would not have been viable or vital in the community. And one of the things that we preach is the locations that we go to and where those AEDs are. Because we want our students to go to walk out of here better trained than when I walked in and know if I'm at XYZ box store, there's a high likelihood the AED will be in one of these locations because they might be the only ones that can step up and act in that emergency. And we want to hear about it if they do. Whether outcome is good or bad, they can always reach out to us and have a conversation with us. Ryan's a critical stress debriefer. We can have those hard conversations because we've been on both sides.
Yeah. So it's important for business to know not only that they have the equipment, but that the equipment is in working order. Because it could be like, I know like my fire extinguisher's been sitting there for how long? I don't know if it would actually work or not. You know, I mean, so in some businesses, it's legally required.
Yeah. So not only do we do training and we kind of discussed, we do obviously AED inspections, we sell AEDs, we have a management program. Our management program actually makes compliance super simple. As you mentioned, there are laws. There are federal laws and there are state laws. The laws vary state to state. One of our partners has a really good legal map. You can click on the state and see. But there's federal requirements. You have to have a prescription. If you place the device on somebody, the vent has to be downloaded. A physician has to review it, and it has to be sent to the FDA, and it has to be sent to the victim's doctor. We had an incident recently with one of our sites in the Boston area, and it was the first time we had to go through this, and we got to see the report. So they're doing it, and the FDA says you must maintain the unit, which means you've got to keep it in order. New York State very similarly has similar laws. You must maintain the unit. You have to register it with the 911 answering center. So any AED, at least in the state of New York and Massachusetts and a couple of the other states are like this. You have to register it. So when you call 911 out on the street, if there's an AED nearby, they will know and they will tell you. New York State requires that you have emergency response plan and physician oversight, which that gets expensive. And then in New York State, it's actually against the law to utilize an AED without training. Vermont, on the other hand, take it off the wall and do what it says. You don't have to be trained.
Right.
So New York State, Massachusetts, I think like Connecticut, they kind of follow that same tenet. Vermont follows two of the four, but yes. So again, the training comes into play. We also educate on the AEDs, and we do this a lot. We actually have a management program that we use. We actually helped beta test it, I think, when it was in its infancy with them. And I was actually, it was 2023, we went down to their life-saving summit, and I was asked to speak about a program that does all this compliance. It's like $12 a month per AED, provides the prescription, provides the physician oversight, provides the monthly checks, and they have to take a picture that they're standing in front of it. And again, if they use the unit, they get overnighted a loaner. So they're not down more than 24 hours, all free of charge. They ship theirs back. They do the downloads and all the regulatory stuff, refresh it, send it back. They do an initial stress debrief if you want that. And again, $12 a month. So it's really inexpensive. And we've got, I think, about 72 AEDs under management.
Wow, that's a great service then. So it's just 12. Is there an initial fee?
No.
That's 12 a month.
We just need some basic information on the unit. Typically, the serial number, the batteries have an expiration date and a lot number, and the pads do in case there's recalls or anything. We plug all that in the system. We set up one of their employees or their staff as like the AED manager. If they have multiple locations and sites, which some of our customers do, we can have an individual inspectors at each site. It'll start warning them about 3 days ahead of time, hey, your inspection's coming due. And if they miss it, and it starts escalating up the chain, but that supervisor can see all of their sites, all of their AEDs, and see the status. About 90 days out, when things are starting to expire, they get notices, hey, your battery's expiring in 90 days, probably time to order some. And then they contact us, we go through that cycle.
Uh-huh. So that's a good service. So the types of businesses that require this. So is it like any business that has a certain number of employees or certain types of industries that might be a bit more hazardous? Or
so,
like, ideally everybody would. But
if you look under New York State law, there's public access defibrillation or PAD laws, and they do have requirements in there. After the DeMar Hamlin incident, they actually increased some things. One of them that changed was it used to be gyms with a 500 membership. 500 members or higher had to have an AED. They lowered it to 50. Mm-hmm. So, and they consider gym anything from a rock climbing gym to Planet Fitness as a gym. Anywhere you go to pay a membership to exercise. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the changes, any kind of public program. We have a customer that runs a youth camp over the summer, and the Department of Health regulates that. And then they actually rented AED from us for a couple of months. And I had to fill out all of this Department of Health paperwork and the local EMS oversight organization. So there are some specific, I guess, businesses or organizations that are required to have an AED. It's mostly public stuff. So again, public youth camps and things like that. It's not like the pharmacies have to have it. You'd be surprised. We do a lot of training at a lot of the pharmacies and they don't have them. And their philosophy is we have 3,000 sites. Imagine trying to keep 3,000 AEDs in working order because it's a liability if you don't. If we don't have them, we just cut the risk and we can't get sued. It's a strategy. I get it. Yeah. It makes sense. So not required to. But again, as Travis said, some of the big box stores have them. Mm-hmm. One of the big box stores in the last year went through the whole country and replaced all of them. They're all new and up to date.
It's not just their customers. It's they've got a large number of staff working probably around the clock.
A diverse group of folks that go grocery shopping or go clothes shopping. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a wide ranging thing. You know, you think of a doctor's office, you assume everybody there is probably sick. You go grocery shopping, you're not really thinking about the little lady or the man who lives all by themselves and has no family. And the only social interaction that they get is when they go grocery shopping. And those are the folks that'll stop and talk to you just because you smiled at them. Those are the people that maybe you don't have access to consistent health care. And if they have an emergency, we want folks in the world to be ready to act, both from a staffing standpoint, from a civilian standpoint.
Yeah.
We hope that anyone that comes through our doors leaves with the ability to know that I will do the best I can with the equipment that I have access to and the training that I've had. That's kind of my go-to. You could be a brain surgeon, but if somebody goes into sudden cardiac arrest at the grocery store, you only have access to yourself and hopefully an AED, and that's all that you have. Mm-hmm. You're getting down to the very nuts and bolts of CPR training and having that comfort level. And one of the things that we talk about, we teach our students is just get through the first step, check your seat for safety, take a deep breath. You're already working with the system. Check our seat, patient for responsiveness. Oh my God, you realize your patient's unresponsive, that this is really happening. Take that deep breath, refocus. You know, the biggest thing that everyone in the public community assumes is you call 911 and someone will be there in the first 2 minutes. That is not the way the averages works. You know, given the current crisis that emergency services as a whole is going through, fire, law enforcement, and emergency services as a whole, we are starting to become our own first responders in the field. Mm-hmm. And we like our students to know that our patients are depending on us. And yes, it's going to be scary and it's a lot. Percentages tell us that you're more likely to do CPR or deal with a choking victim with someone you know personally. So the chances are that you take this class, you might use it on someone that you know and you love. So take that deep breath. Get through those first steps. Everything that you do, as long as it's nothing, is a step in the right direction. And it gives you the ability to walk away from that potential tragedy saying, but I did everything I could do. Might not have been everything that could have been done in general, but it's everything you could have physically done in them, including putting AEDs in the homes. We have clients and students that have purchased AEDs from our home because they didn't know that they could. And we love that. That's just one more AED in the community that an emergency service dispatcher can talk a frantic person through. Hey, you have an AED in your laundry room above your washer and dryer. Go get that. This we're going to talk through it. I think one of the other big benefits that we have is we always wanted to be more than just a CPR company. Last year, so 2024, we started the process of adding OSHA training to our
organization. I was going to ask. Yeah,
it's no small feat whatsoever. But Cody Addington, she is our OSHA compliance and OSHA instructor, is a key role in that position. She comes from 10 years working in CBRN, so chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, hazardous materials, management, cleanup, and dispersal. And she is very low-key, and she goes into these environments with these clients that we're gonna do this as a team. With the ability of her experience to work in the client's protocols when possible into their training, reinforces health and safety, and then that client's protocols. And in one situation, the protocols were actually updated because of Cody's experience. So she realized these protocols are outdated. So let's work together to get them updated. And the client was excited. Ryan's done a lot of stuff for us to be able to build. People don't ever realize the back of the house that a business has. Ryan is a key role and basically doing all the stuff that when he speaks, I stare and nod. I don't know what we're talking about. A website. Who would have thought how important a website could be?
Marketing person, so I know.
He goes in, he changes a couple of things, and then 3 days later, our phone starts ringing.
Okay.
So, you know, Ryan is the reason that we have the certifications that we have. So with that, OSHA and our ability to bring localized OSHA training to, I don't want to say that we're an underserved community. It's very difficult to just find an OSHA authorized instructor from forklift training to HAZ Whopper to OSHA 10, OSHA 30, and especially having them come on site or having access to a building such as ours where we can have a more intimate setting in the conference room where you are now and have five people and an instructor have a very intimate training session where we go to our lower training area and we can have 18 students with multiple TVs where they can have a larger experience so that client can send their entire team out and one shot on how they're taken care of. So we're very lucky that we have the offices that we have, that we have people that are they're experts in what they do. Ryan's an expert in all the things that he does. Cody is an expert in the things that she does. And I think I'm pretty good at the things that I do. And I think that the team environment that we built over 5 years comes directly from the instructors that we've had the honor and privilege to work alongside. We've had instructors from FDNY and NYPD. Some of them have responded to the 9/11 terror attacks. We have a gentleman from Long Island that was a part of several of the rescue missions during the hurricanes that hit New York City and Long Island. And we have a young lady here that has her master's in public mental health, and she's a lifeguard instructor, and she does internal classes here, and she's absolutely amazing. We have another young lady in our Connecticut office who her kids are now just starting college, and based off of her experience left, she decided she wanted to go to EMT school. And the reason was because you and Ryan have such good stories. I just want to have my home. So those are instructors.
You're inspiring people.
And we're happy because we're putting more potential lifesavers back into the community. And some of our best instructors started off as they came to a class and then said, I want to become an instructor based off of this experience. And we're privileged to be able to leave that kind of impression on our students that training doesn't have to suck. You know, we know it's boring. We do this a couple hundred times, every so many months. So if we can be enthusiastic about this material, teaching this for the 200th time, you know, fifth season alone in a year, that we want you to be an enthusiastic learner because this is the first time you might be hearing this in your life. So if we get to the mindset of, great, I got to go teach another CPR class today, well, then our students are going to pick up on that. But if we're like, we're going to do CPR, why are you here? I go to SUNY Adirondack, and I'm on the basketball team, and I have a scholarship. That's fantastic. You know, you're not only a member of our community, but you're a student athlete. And now you might be the reason that some younger person who looks up to you might want to be like, you know what? I want to take a CPR class like they did. And I think that that's what makes what we do so amazing in our communities, whether they're local or, you know, in some cases we are just checking a box, but that might lead to further conversations at that job site.
Yeah.
Why don't we have an AED boss? Like, I think we should get one, and that gets, you know, more employees to be like, yeah, why don't we have an AED?
Yeah.
The statistics have proven that if we have an AED deployed in the first 60 seconds, we have a greater likelihood of a reversal on site. So I think what we do here matters, but it's also challenging. Like Ryan said, when our client comes once every 2 years, that is a challenge. To keep doing things the way we do, because we want to do it the right way. And you're always competing against the internet. CPR class, $15.95.
Yeah, that's always tough. But the hands-on stuff is necessary.
Yes, ma'am.
So you did touch a bit on the OSHA as well, because that's what I was going to say, because a lot of it, we're talking about emergency response, but there's prevention is important also. So you do consulting. Do you do that type of consulting where you go in and health and safety practices and...
So we're working with a local organization. One of the things that we want to make our clients very clear on, once we start the conversation, especially if it involves OSHA, we're working on an NDA. So we're not going to break their trust during those conversations. And if things don't work out for whatever reason, they decide that we're not a good fit, we're not going to use any of that information against them, because that's just not how we do things here. And we try to look at it from a team environment. So one of our clients locally has chosen to use a subscription-based model, which oddly enough was not supposed to be deployed until September originally, and now we deployed it about 4 months early. So that was kind of a, we're going to figure this out as we go kind of a thing. But they decided that they want access to a health and safety person, which is going to be Cody, who's our OSHA rep. We're starting off with a initial OSHA level inspection. So we will be going through that facility with a fine-tooth comb, doing a mock OSHA inspection, just like OSHA would if they show up for many of the reasons that they might show up. And that starts the team effort. Because at the end of the day, we're the only company that you're okay starting off with the worst conversation possible, because everything after that is a teamwork environment to improve where we are. The last thing that we want is 3 months from now to have two more visits and still be finding things. That doesn't show that tried the first time, and it doesn't show confidence to our customer.
Yeah.
So the first visit, the first official walkthrough, always going to be the hardest. Cody's point of view is, we're going to do this as a team. We're going to do this together, and it's going to hurt a little bit, but we're going to be better off for a long term.
It's all about improvement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we also find all the good things too. So it's not just let's find all the bad. Yeah. Let's find the good things. Let's, you know, your eyewash stations are being checked and they're marked and they're clear, so nobody will trip over walking to the eyewash station, or in some cases, running to the eyewash station. Yeah. So that's a great thing that, you know, maybe gets overlooked because it's so obvious, but we want to notice the good things too. You know, working on forklifts that have harnesses or have forklift training. Forklift training does not transfer job to job. Right. So if you're working at location A as a forklift operator and then you go to location B, you actually have to be recertified as a forklift operator at location B. They're not transferable. And a lot of organizations don't realize that, but their buildings are laid out differently. The other things that we do with that consulting or that subscription services is based on your model, you have access to training. So we know that we're not going to train everybody every month CPR, AED, first aid. So what we do is part of the subscription process is CPR, AED, first aid training. But it's based off of, for this particular client, every 3 months they have a training option. So let's say everybody's been trained in CPR, AED, first aid for that facility. Then we can introduce an OSHA training model for that 1 day time slot. So that way we're reinforcing the training consistently and they have options. And they have time where they can reach out to Cody, myself, or Ryan and say, I have a question. And they get so many hours allotted to them every month for that dedicated contact with her. And also, if OSHA does arrive unexpectedly, they can call us and Cody will make every effort that she possibly can to come on site immediately and safely to mitigate basically the client speaking.
Yeah.
Her responsibility is really to be the go between from the OSHA, hopefully in the next 90 days, the MSHA, which is my safety health association, and the client, because Cody's not going to have a emotional reaction. She knows what they're looking for. And then she can she can help point the client in the right direction of, yes, this is something that we can fix easily and we can argue other things. It was overlooked for too long, and that one we're not going to win. So we're not going to win every battle. Really lucky to have her to do that for us on the OSHA side. Ryan has developed a training curriculum for PESH. And I think he'd be the greatest person to describe. Yeah, he's a great one to explain what PESH is.
So public employee safety and health.
Okay.
So it's the New York State version of OSHA for public employees. So any public employee, and that includes fire departments, paid or volunteer, have to do PESH. Obviously, you've been a firefighter for a very long time.
Office-related employees, or is this just...
Anybody.
Okay.
Pretty much anybody that's a public employee. So there's a requirement. So not only in New York State, just even as volunteer employees and volunteer departments, we still have to do the workplace harassment, sexual harassment, like every other company in New York. We also have to train in certain things. It can be everything from response safety to scene safety to respiratory and SCBA, basically our air packs, right? How to safely do those. Bloodborne pathogens, if we're doing EMS or not, we typically do bloodborne pathogens. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's required. There's other things that are recommended, and you have to do this annually. It doesn't matter if you've been doing it for 30 years. It has to be done every single year. So we had a couple of fire departments reach out to us asking us if we can do this, because it's difficult to just get everybody together and get these curriculums together. So we're working on that whole plan, basically, where we can come in and do like a PESH Saturday, and we can come in 8 hours and knock out, you know, the two required classes. Plus, we give them an option. Some of the departments, you know, hey, you know what, we'll do this and we'll do that, and then you guys do these other things. And there's some options. So they can get, here's the requirement. Here are the other things that we can recommend. We're going to do these ahead of time. Okay, well, we'll throw these two in and we'll do that for you. But it's required, like I said, every single year. I've been doing it every year since I started doing this. So that's another big thing. And it's along the OSHA lines. It's just the public safety side.
Very interesting. So you do cover a lot of ground. And I think you found that there's a need. So we are good at doing this training. We can just modify and take the other trainings on board. So that's a great business model.
Now, the challenge that especially a lot of the more rural fire departments, and if you know anything about the fire departments, the, you know, obviously volunteers are dwindling. The average age of the fire department's going up slowly. Their training requirements. When I started, the initial training class that I had to take was 39 hours. It was pretty much, here's how fire works. Here's how you button your coat. Here's how you tie a knot. Good luck. Don't kill yourself. And your department kind of did all your training. Now, today, the class that I was helping at was the last of this summer hybrid firefighter one class. It's almost 200 hours. So you have to do all of that training, plus you have to do all of this other training, plus now you pile on this OSHA 8.
And these are volunteers.
Correct. So a lot of these departments are struggling to get all of this done and get this in there. And not only the training, but the other things we see is if there is an incident, PESH is going to come in and do an inspection. And one of the things you're going to say is, did you do your training? Because they're going to want to see all your training records. Let me see your SOPs or your guidelines. Let me see your training records. And one of the departments, we're actually helping them build a whole set of curriculum, basically. And they can kind of templatize it, right? If you're going to do, you know, a tower burn, you can already have it pre-filled out. You plug in the date and the time and anything different. But it lists what we did, how long we did it, what OSHA and what NFPA regulations does it meet? So that if they come in and say, you know, somebody was injured, it was a respiratory issue, what training did you do? They can pull out the sheets and not only go, they were present at this training, but here's what we trained on.
Yeah.
So we're helping them kind of that preventative compliance. Hopefully they never have to use it. But we're helping them build the case and have the documentation. And a lot of these departments, again, either just, they don't have the time. They don't have the expertise. Like, everybody's stretched thin right now. So,
and one of the big things we've learned from this is a lot of the fire departments used to just rely on their members to do online-based, self-paced training. And they get towards the end of the year and realize that, we'll just say, Chip Jones has done none of it. Or some volunteers do not like to use computers. And so we are saying, I'm sorry that you don't know how to use a computer. You don't have access to one. But either you do the online training or, unfortunately, you won't even be a member here.
Yeah.
So we're taking a viable member out of our first line of defense volunteer community because they don't want to use a computer, don't have a computer. I mean,
that's a good point, too, because we see this across all of our training. We do a lot of blended training, but we have some students that just they can't learn in that model. Yeah. They have to sit in the classroom. They have to be present. So we do full classes. If a student call and say, hey, or there's a technology challenge, or they don't have access, we can do that. But that's a great point. Some people just can't learn that way.
Yeah, it's good that you can offer it all sort of offline, too.
Yeah, we have clients that will come to us and say, we want our folks to be sitting in a classroom for the duration of the class, because they know some people will just burn through it. But we also look at the cognitive understanding of blended learning. So I'm a very tactile learner. That was my biggest challenge when I went to EMT school almost 20 years ago, is I do not do well in written exams. But if you give me a real life situation where it's tangible, I could show you, like, understand the material because I can talk through it. You can't really talk through things on a written exam. So some of our clients will tell us, we always try to give our clients the option because we understand having your staff on a service on a workday for 2.5 hours versus 6 to 8 is different. And we have companies that we work with where weather is a challenge. So we do roofing companies. And if the weather is horrible, mm-hmm. that's when they want to train. Mm-hmm. But if the day before is amazing weather, that's the day they do want to train. So we try to factor that with our clients. Yeah. Well, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's a quiz, or it's a survey of what do you folks do. And we want to make sure that the right curriculum is being taught for that mm-hmm. course type. HSI is a more industrial style visual learning concept. So working in harsher environments, manufacturing, things like that, it makes sense. But I wouldn't take HSI's training, CPRAD first aid, and then teach school teachers that class. Mm-hmm. But because of that visual interpretation, we want those teachers to be confident and comfortable. But some of the other classes that we teach that are, I don't want to say taboo, but they're hard to discuss, is we teach active shooter survival training. Mm-hmm. That is not something that you can present well to a client and say, we are going through this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the world is not the way it was when any mm-hmm. of us were younger kids, where we would go on the playground at 3 o'clock on a Friday, and whatever happened, and then we'd be friends the next day. It was usually over a girl or a boy or a disagreement. Unfortunately, those days, they don't function that way anymore. Mm. And we want our clients to know that. That's also a class that we offer completely of no charge. We offer it to our community free of charge at our location. And we're very lucky that we can do that.
Yeah.
But how do you explain to a client that we, for a class, active shooter, and present that in a way that doesn't make them uncomfortable? So there are challenges to what we do in the courses that we offer. Again, it comes down to the staff that we have, mm-hmm. our collective experience at our leadership level is just under 100 total years. Mm-hmm. And that means different mindsets because we're from different generations.
Yeah. But it's good to have the mix.
Absolutely.
So we only talked a little bit about your history, your backgrounds, but it's important to what you're doing now. So why don't you just give me the full details of, you were a Marine?
So we're talking there.
School?
Yep. I've been in emergency services for just under 20 years. I've worked in our community as a volunteer. I've also worked at the city of Albany for Mohawk Ambulance Service, which is where a plethora of my experience came from. Worked for Canine Search and Rescue Team. My partner's name was Shasta. She was amazing. Probably best partner that I ever had. I grew up in Lake George, but I'm adopted. My mom was a cancer survivor, a breast cancer survivor when I was 8. My dad was an over the road truck driver. My grandfather owned Made in America Bob Shop and held every position at the Elks except Exalted Ruler, because he didn't want it. And he was in charge of a lot of things there that he came up with. The saddest part of my entire life was when they read a brother and kids died today, and they said, by his funeral. That's the first time in my life I ever heard written out. And that's been used at every Elks funeral since he created it. He was a chaplain. And I believe my work ethic comes from my family, my grandfather, my grandmother, key parts of that in my life. My grandmother never took
it. Sounds like community service is also something that you...
Yeah, my dad was in Lake George Fire for well over a decade. I got into the fire service. I like the puzzle of emergency services. It's fun to put wet stuff on the red stuff. It's fun to cut people out of cars, but to show up and see a car upside down with a patient strapped in and knowing the fire department has to keep the doors open, kind of... lone wolf it, all of a sudden they're yelling at you because you're upside down in the car's roof, just doing things, but they don't want you to. It's been kind of a great experience for me. I wanted to get into federal corrections. It didn't work out that way. Actually, it's called cerebral palsy. I got diagnosed later in life. So a very rare form of that. Mm-hmm. So emergency services is the best way I can serve my community, as long as doing search and rescue. And I've been fortunate enough that I found Ryan through our sister company, mm-hmm. MS in New York. And the first words out of his mouth were talked to him is, do not make me a supervisor. I don't want to be one. A year later, he had two choices, become a supervisor mm-hmm. or leave. And he just sucked it up and he did it. Mm-hmm. And then we ran EMS for Double M on A-Ride, Double M Rodeo, Stillwater. And if you ever ran EMS for a rodeo, it's 15 minutes.
I can imagine.
Oh my God. And then it's 3 hours of sitting there literally doing nothing. Yeah. So somehow, and it was the summer before COVID kind of started. We didn't know what COVID was yet. We just started shooting the breeze and came to the conclusion that we would never retire. Mm-hmm. So what would we do if we won the $1 million? I said, you know, we started a training company. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of had this like 2.5, and me and Ryan were not friends. But we worked together, but we were not having barbecues. We were not calling each other, what are you doing today? Ryan already had the dream of starting a training company long before I came along, which is where Strategic Emergency came from. My piece of that was training and consulting. That's my big win of it. So COVID happened. EMS in New York lost about 95% of its events in 3 months. And we created a $5 logo. And I said, hey, Ryan, I got a logo. What do you think? And I was, hey, Ryan, we have an EIN number.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, Ryan, so I did the thing. We're an LLC now. And then it was, hey, Ryan, I need you to teach an instructor class because I'm bringing over a bunch of EMS people and we're going to make them HSI instructors. And then the building was weird. So Ryan lived in Delmar at that time and I lived up here. And we were looking at a location. Oddly enough, it used to be the preparedness outlet in South Hunts Falls. And I knew the building. So we're like, we kind of need to find space. We're looking at that building and it was not to where we needed to be. And Ryan's like, we are not going anywhere more north than exit 17. Then he found this place at exit 18. He was like, what about this?
Exactly.
And the one time a realtor listened to us, it was our realtor that had this listing. And when I said, why didn't you show us this? He goes, because you said nothing past 17. So we had this the whole time. And like Ryan said, we walked in. It was apartment white. We had no floors. And it took us about 3 months to get it to where it is now. And there's a lot of meaning behind the things if you actually look at it. So in our main lounge slash lobby area, where we actually hold a lot of our classes, very relaxed, instructors up front, TVs in the background so we can play our videos. Behind them is the flag, a wooden flag we had made by a veterans company that donates flags back to veterans. And that was dedicated to the company's plank owners. So plank owners is actually a naval term for the original ones that helped build the ship. And there's some argument on whether or not they deployed on the ship or they didn't to become plank owner. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of my nod to the United States Navy. My grandfather on my mom's side worked in the entry room of the United States Navy. So that was kind of a nod that the original 8 instructors that came up with Strategic was plank owners. And that is their title forever. Even though some of them are no longer with us, they still own that title. We would not be where we are today without essentially the first 8 and really Ryan teaching that first class. In our patch, so we do have a patch that pays nod to our EMS side, but we have Lady Liberty holding a folded flag, and that's by remembrance of the first responders that we lost along the way, not even for 9/11.
Yeah.
But sadly, EMS does not get a lot of recognition of our own. We have a very small tree in the city of Liberty by the museum, and if you look at the firefighters, it's huge. And while I wish that we had no names on either of them, we try to pay homage in all of the little things that you see throughout the organization. If you're a part of that community, it should start a conversation. So part of our logo is part of the Maltese Cross and the EMS Star Life, EMS and Fire. Our Lady Liberty is actually holding a trident on our patch to pay more homage. So and those have sparked conversations. I was actually teaching a class and somebody was in the Navy and on the back of my hat, it says plank owner. He goes, what ship did you help build? And we got to have a conversation. And then by the end of that class, a gentleman told me he'd been taking these classes for 20 years, military and civilian. This was the best class I've ever had. I like to believe it's because we had that personal moment during the class that made him feel like this. I'm not a number to them. I'm actually a student. And with the amount of miles that myself and Ryan drive, I like to believe that if one of my students ever pulled me out of a car, I'm in pretty good hands.
Right. That's the thing.
That's what I look at.
People that might be helping you later on.
Exactly. Exactly. As I mentioned, the patch, that was actually designed by one of our plank owners. Designed our patch. She actually lives in Texas now. Mm-hmm. We voted on it. I kind of said, this is what I want. Everybody agreed to it. It's funny. So there's a training organization up in Oriskany, the Department of Homeland Security and Defense. They do training for first responders. And one of our providers put our patch up there. A firefighter from Texas was up there, took a picture of it, tracked us down. And all I got was, how do I get one of these?
Oh, that's funny.
So we made a deal with them. You sent us a patch from your department in Texas. We'll gladly send one of our strategic patches out to you as a thank you. It's just those moments where we get to remain a part of the community, both from a civilian and first responder world, I think is what brings us joy here, that we can fluidly work along all lines of communication, and we know how to speak to each particular demographic, yeah. whether it's corporate, mm-hmm. civilian, or, you know,
yeah.
OSHA, or we're working with school teachers. We know how mm-hmm. to integrate what we've done, and we can curtail our teaching ways and what references we use right. during that yeah. path.
So it's going to vary yeah. depending on who you're working with.
Absolutely.
And Ryan, we didn't get a deep dive into your background.
So from the area originally, I actually grew up in Clifton Park. My parents were big into volunteering a lot with the church and things like that. So that's sort of how I came into that. Interestingly enough, I was going to high school. I went to CBA down in Albany, the old campus. And a friend of mine who lived up here in Clifton Park had joined the fire department. And he's like, you should do this. You should check this out. And I'm having all this good time. He was in the Jonesville Fire Department at the time, so I went up there and saw the fire trucks. I'm like, well, this is kind of cool. And walked into my fire department one Monday night and said, hey, I want to join. I was 17 years old, so at the time, I had to have a permission slip from my parents. So I actually got the permission slip. Like I said, I went through that initial training in Rexburg. It was about 39 hours. And what was pretty interesting was I was actually at the station one night. We were doing cutting a car up for a drill. And one of my friends, who I didn't know at the time, but he was a producer for Channel 10, they were doing a documentary on why people volunteer. So he grabbed a bunch of us new people and said, why are you here? So that was kind of neat. It was sort of my first experience and all of that kind of stuff. So started out doing that. I've been a firefighter now for 35 years. That was down, you know, Clifton Park, Half Moon area, West Preston Fire Department. I spent some time in Clifton Park Fire Department when I moved. I was in the Swingerlands Fire Department down outside of Albany. And currently right now I'm with the Greenfield Fire District. We have four companies over there. We cover about 82 square miles. We cover everything from the Adirondacks to the Milton Vault. So we have about 28 pieces of equipment. We've got quite a few firefighters. Pretty cool opportunity there. When I got into the fire department, one of the things that a lot of fire departments do now is EMS. And my department, when I was in West Crescent, did that. Most of our calls were EMS. And because I didn't know anything, I was the guy standing there holding the oxygen tank. So I decided after a year, like, I might as well go do something and be useful. So a couple of us went, and at the time, Quad Graphics was holding EMT classes at their building because some of their staff would take it, and the county was holding them there. So we would go to Quad Graphics for about 6 months, about 120 hours, did an EMT class, got to do some ER time down at Albany Med, which was awesome. And just really got into that, almost to the point that I was going to school for criminal justice, and I stopped my major and was considering emergency medicine or something along those lines. Started doing that, was doing that for a while with the Clifton Park Ambulance, and then got an opportunity to move to Arizona. Always wanted to go out west, always wanted to do something different. My wife at the time was like, go for it. And I got in the car on a Friday night and left, drove cross country for 3 days. Funny story about that, Friday night when I left, it was my dad's birthday. So my wife went over to my parents' house and they're like, where's Ryan? She's like, oh, about Indianapolis right now. And they're like, what? Because they didn't even know I left. We made this decision at 2 o'clock in the morning. That I was
leaving. Oh, 2 in the morning.
I was just, yeah, I had something went on with my job. I got kind of got burned out of job. And I'm like, I got to change. So ended up out in Arizona. And most of the fire departments in that Phoenix metro area and all the cities around it are paid. So got involved with the city police department. They had a volunteer program. We were out on the street on patrol. We were in patrol cars. We were assisting officers with everything from traffic control to motorists that were broken down, towing vehicles after arrests. And then I got later on and got onto their DUI task force. So I was driving their DUI truck. We would go around to different cities during the holidays and do all of that. Did a lot with the DUI group. So that was pretty cool. So I did that. When I got out to Arizona, I wanted to keep my EMT because I was a New York EMT. So I went through a 24-hour program at Mason Community College, put on my Mason Fire Department, got my reciprocity, and they knew I was an EMT in the police department, so they didn't need me. They let me do patient care. I also got involved with the Pinal County Sheriff's Office Mountain Rescue Team. So I got to use some of my skills there, learned a lot of rope skills and things like that. We would rescue people off some of the mountains and things like that. Helicopter operations was kind of neat. I also joined the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office as a volunteer with them.
Famous Maricopa County.
Sheriff Joe Arpaio. I'm the sheriff in America.
I was big underwear guy.
Maricopa County.
Penn City.
For some reason.
You know, that's the county that encompasses Phoenix. Maricopa County is actually bigger than the state of New Jersey.
Like Breaking Bad. Was that Maricopa County?
So he was the sheriff that the inmates hated because they made him wear pink underwear.
He said, Maloney, Penn City.
Yep.
Yeah. Joe was the toughest sheriff in America at the time.
For entertainment.
Yeah.
by a TV. So his thought process was, if you can pedal a bike, then you can watch TV. Oh. The only TV channels you could watch were educational. And they had fans in the tent city, which basically turned them into a very uncomfortable convection oven.
They wouldn't let him build a new jail because they didn't have the money. So he went down to the Marine Station in Yuma, and Yuma gave them a whole bunch of surplus tents. And he literally put fences up and built Tent City. And he said, if our soldiers can live in the desert in tents, then you can live in desert in tents. You know, what's good for them is good for you. So it worked for him. They had about 3,600 volunteers. Again, huge county. About 1,700 of us went through all of the training to be armed. So we went through the firearms training and handcuff training. We got pepper sprayed and all of that training. And when we were out on the street, we were basically deputized. We were working under the authority of a deputy. We didn't have to be with them. Got to do some really cool stuff. Got to do some traffic stuff. We would do like a deadbeat dad roundup on Father's Day. We'd go looking
for Father's Day.
Oh, yeah, we'd round them up and then do a whole press conference with all the arrested pro football players. We got to do some really cool stuff. And my background, I got a criminal justice degree, so it kind of fed that niche. And I got to still do the public safety. I ended up in between in Florida for a couple of years in Tampa for my job. So I had to go to Georgia, to Atlanta, took the National Registry exam. So at one point, I was in New York, Florida, Georgia, Arizona, nationally EMT certified. And then ended up back in Arizona for another 5 years, and then eventually came back up here to the Northeast due to some in-laws that were sick. So once I got back here, I got my EMT back. I was working for an ambulance down in Albany County. It was in the fire department down there. And then eventually, probably 3 or 4 years ago, I moved up to Northern Saratoga County. Last year, I finally let my EMT sunset after 34 years. I was like, all right, I've had enough. Still in the fire department, though, still an interior firefighter, do a lot of driving. I'm a fire department explorer advisor, so we have about 16 kids between the ages of 14 to 18 that we're doing basically.
Oh, so they do
firefighter training with
them. For you.
It's affiliated with the Boy Scouts of America, so we're loosely affiliated with the post, I think, out of Saratoga. So they cover the insurance and everything, and when they turn 16, they can be a junior firefighter. So several of our guys are also juniors. But we just put 4 or 5 of them through the Firefighter 1 training. A second one is doing it over the summer. Some of the kids came in from Corinth Fire Department. They came in from Wilton Fire Department. So not only are we helping our department, we're helping the surrounding, our mutual aid partners. It's a really good program, and they seem to really enjoy it. A couple of weeks ago, we actually took them to this first annual kind of competition training day in Greenwich that was put on by the Greenwich Explorer post, and they had a great time. So every year, hopefully, we can continue this tradition. So I really enjoy doing it. Obviously, I'm older now, so I'm able to take what I've learned and kind of pass it back on to these guys and train the future generation. But I'm going to keep doing it until I can't. So I just
That's
enjoy
great.
Doing it.
Toy drive? Yeah, toy drives. Awesome. Okay. So we do two things. So the first thing we tried to do, start doing 5 years ago, was a mixer. Very similar to what ARCC does, but it was called Not All Heroes Wear Capes. And our thought process was we bring veterans, first responders, their family, their spouses that have small businesses. We bring them together. It costs nothing to anyone at all. And they can meet up, and then civilians can come in as well. The thought process is maybe that this person does roof, but you do windows. Mm-hmm. And you are in the Army, and they're in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And you have similar outlooks on life and viewpoints. And, you know, you have that continued want to serve. Mm-hmm. Maybe you guys or girls will come together and say, actually, I have a client that needs a new roof. I noticed that, but I have anyone to recommend. Okay, well, great, because I have something that needs windows. Mm-hmm. So let's see what we can do to connect. We had a lot of support. So Twin Bridges supported us with free trash disposal, Lox and Bagels cuts us a really nice discount because we would try our best to keep everything as close to our community as humanly possible for anything that we do here. Why would we ask you to support our small business if we're not in return supporting yours? Mm-hmm. That's just not fair to the community. And unfortunately, we couldn't get any traction. So honestly, the first one that we did was about with our first year here. Mm-hmm. We had about 10 people show up. And it was only because they were trying to support us personally. So we had friends, family,
that's
our fellow.
Yeah.
So we waited about 3 months and we tried to do it again. And it was me and Ryan and two instructors sitting here with about 50 bagels, just staring at each other.
Kind of
deflated. So we realized that there's another organization that always does something similar. They've been doing it forever. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for us because you think of a CPR company, you automatically think non-for-profit. Well, we are for-profit. Yeah. We don't really operate as a for-profit company. As you can see, we're not driving brand new vehicles, or we don't have the nicest of everything. We try to be a good steward of our community and hope that it'll grow for us organically with our community members. We kind of gave up on that, and I decided after talking with Ryan, let's do Toys for Tots Run. Like, let's see what happens. Yeah. And so we joined up with Bare Bones Furniture because they actually own our building. Yeah. And we said, this is what we want to do. Will you guys help us co-sponsor it? So they have in-house a graphic artist who helped us build a really nice logo. They covered the cost of big notice in the Post-Star. And we had WGY, I think, come out. Mm-hmm. And they come out every year as our radio station. And we had Santa Claus here and Mrs. Claus for 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Santa usually has about a 30-minute time limit. They hung out for 2.5 hours. We ran our toy run for 6 hours. Now, normally, they're ran for 1 to 2 hours. Our thought process was is we were outside the whole time. We had burgers and hot dogs going. I learned how to make hot cider. We had cider donuts from the truck stop in Suffolk mm-hmm. Falls. And we realized by doing it for that long, well, it is cold and uncomfortable. People will drive by, their kids will freak out. Mm-hmm. They don't want to come in empty-handed to see Santa, so they will run to the CVS where they're riding a Walgreens, mm-hmm. grab a couple of toys and throw in the toy bin that we mm-hmm. had out front, nice and visible. Mm-hmm. And then they got to meet Santa and Mrs. Claus and drop off the toy. They got to learn about what we did here.
So you do that every year now?
We used to do it with the United States Marine Corps Toys for Tots, yeah. and we changed up to keep it more local. We realized there was a little bit of a community disconnect, so we switched over to the Marine Detachment out of Hudson Falls, which is a United States Marine Corps Toys for mm-hmm. Boys and Girls. I probably have mm-hmm. that backwards. And when we did our first one with them 2 years ago, mm-hmm. he thought I was incorrectly putting our time frame on there because they like to actually come physically be here as a supporter. So mm-hmm. we know that we have somebody to back us mm-hmm. up. And when he realized I was serious, when I said we do this for 6 hours, mm-hmm. Was expecting that. Yeah. So 6 hours is a long time to do a toy run, but year after year, we fill up 2 giant toy bins.
We also, as part of that, from probably September on for the classes here at this building, we advertise a discount. The student brings a toy in, we'll give them a credit back. Okay. So we will give them a discount on their class if they come in.
Mm-hmm. Folks can mail in toys too. So if they want to mail in toys, they want to do it anonymously as the toys come in. We take a picture of it, we post it on our Facebook page. These toys have been anonymously donated. Thank you for that supporter. Because we want to understand that everybody does it for accolades.
Our American Heart Training Center is actually based out of Birmingham, Alabama, and they send toys every year. Mm-hmm. They ship them up for us.
That's great.
Our instructors will send toys, or I created a Venmo account because some folks were like, how about I just send you?
Yeah, and that's towards, because then they might not be able to get.
Exactly.
The company as well usually put in several $100 and go shop.
So I go over budget every year, and I always do it when Ryan's teaching a class, because we do evening and weekend classes, because I know Ryan will yell at me in front of students. So I always bring extra money. He doesn't know that I brought. 2 years ago, what kid doesn't want a bicycle? So I made sure that I bought a bicycle and a helmet when Ryan was teaching, dropped it off, left to turn my phone off. So he could not tell me. Because everything we do, like any business, is about budgets, kind of ask for forgiveness, not permission kind of a guy, which doesn't always work out super well. Mm-hmm. But Ryan's always been super supportive of that. And I feel like that's why we have such a good system going on.
You need to have that balance of personalities and responsibilities and everything to get the business.
Not corporate. I've always been the worker bee, pick things up, put them down that are heavy. Ryan is worth through. The C-suite, which I have not, and Cody from OSHA has worked on both sides. So they help me understand different things. Like sometimes I'll see Cody send an email to a health and safety person, and I'll be terrified. And she goes, it's okay. That's how we talk to each other. It actually shows that I'm being respectful to them. And it scares me. And then I see the email back and just like all nonchalant about it. And it just scares me. So we have a really good group of people here. And we're always looking for more instructors. We do it. Ryan really is kind of the growth behind that. Mm-hmm. Is we do about an instructor class every 3 months, whether it's American Heart or American Red Cross. Mm-hmm. And out of those students, we're always looking for more. And if you come to one of our regular enrollment classes and you have interest in becoming an instructor, you can sit down with one of us and we'll tell you the good, bad, and the indifferent. Because like any industry, there's things that we really like and that are really positive. There's things that we wish we could change. And being an instructor full-time is a challenge. A really great example of that is end of October, all of November, all of December, folks really aren't thinking about health and safety training. They're thinking about getting through Halloween and getting through Thanksgiving. In some cases, they are remembering those that we've lost throughout the year and having those hard moments. And then we go right towards Christmas, which makes it even more of a challenge to pay for extra things for businesses and individuals. And then we get into January. And January is a little bit rough for us. It's pretty lean. So organizations that want training in November, December, or January, they have a pretty wide open calendar that they can pick from, and we encourage them to reach out to us, but we try to fill that internal training. Ryan's in charge of our instructor development, so he helps make sure our instructors are, they know what's going on as fast as he gets a hold of it, where my main duties are instructor and client acquisition and retention. So I really like having those conversations with instructors. We have instructors here that apply across the country that have no experience being an instructor. And one of my, if you have emergency services at any level or military anywhere on your resume, even if I can see that you have no experience being an instructor at any level, you will always have a conversation with me to open that door. And my conversations are there too. Why do you want to be an instructor? And for some of our veterans and first responders, instruction is physically demanding. You have to be able to, and I mean this in the most polite way possible, you have to be able to perfectly demonstrate a skill in front of people you've never met. Mm-hmm. And some of our first responders are no longer physically able to do that. And I try to be polite. There's other things that you can do. You can set up these classes for your community. You can hold a stop the bleed class where we could actually be standing the entire time. But as far as CPR, AED, every single one of us has to be able to get on the ground unassisted and get up unassisted.
When I was doing my training, we had to have pads under our knees.
Well, we always have pads here.
That was the challenge.
If you follow our website or our Facebook page or our website, we try to really bat it this time of year. I try to put up pictures of past classes, but I also try to respect the individual needs of each student. We try very hard not to have a picture of the student's face when we take the pictures. The kind of joke is when Ryan's teaching a class, he'd be like, Travis is the Facebook guy, so don't mind him. And if they look at me, I'll be ready to take a picture. My joke is don't look at me, it makes it weird. So that way they have some kind of anonymity. It also shows the public, like, this is not scary. This is something that we can do. Or you can come, you can take a class. You can say at the very beginning, I cannot get on the ground, but I still want to learn. And you can become a helpful bystander. And you can direct others how to do compressions, how to do breathing, how to use an AED. So there's, regardless of your skill set or your physical abilities, there's something that we can all do in that emergency.
Yeah, that's always good to know.
And there's, for students, there's not really an age limit. Basically, it's understanding of the skills, be able to pass the exam, and you can take these courses. Because we also offer babysitting CAPS courses as well.
I noticed that on the sign outside.
Cody is the one that teaches that course. She's mom. She has two daughters. One of them is a juvenile diabetic. She works great with students of all ages. A lot of times, it can be weird coming to a place you've never been and sitting through a class like that. Cody does an amazing job. She has daughters, which is, she's just got that mom / big sister kind of persona where after a couple of minutes, it's just a fun experience for them.
So the full range of training that you guys do. What would be the first step they'd need to take? Is it to go to your website?
Yeah, they can go to our website. We have a contact form that comes into a group email, so a bunch of us see it. There's an email address on there they can email, or they can call us. Usually one of us is available during the day to answer the phone. If we're not, they leave a voicemail. It gets transcribed and sent to us.
Okay.
Usually pretty good at getting back to them within at least an hour or two, depending on what we're doing.
So, if Ryan gets an email or I get an email, we'll make sure like emails have been responded or voicemails have been answered. Mm-hmm. That also means if you call us at 10 o'clock at night, do not get mad when we call you at 10:30 at night. We try our
best. That's why some people do like to just email, because you could do it at night and know you're not bothering anyone.
It's never a bother. Yeah. We have students that will call us and say, I just got a new job. I need to be trained tomorrow morning. And
we'll
do whatever we can to keep our workforce moving forward. We know how difficult it can be to get through the hiring process of a job. And if there's a reason is you need your CPR or you need your basic life support certification, if we can figure out a way to make it work, we will do our best to accommodate getting someone trained in an emergency situation for no added fee within 24 hours if we can make it work. But that caveat might be we're meeting at our office at 6 a.m. or we're meeting at 8 o'clock at night. We will do a same-day certification because we want more people in the workforce. And a certification shouldn't be the reason that you have you're delayed feeding your family. That's one of the things that we've seen is, I see you have a course next week. I need it tomorrow. What can we do?
Yeah.
Let me see what instructor is available. And the funny thing is, sometimes we get an email, I need to take a CPR class as soon as possible. And me or Ryan will respond, does 12 o'clock today work? Well, I'm not available today. Right. Because they weren't expecting that response. Yeah.
Well, that's great. It was great to meet you both. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining me in this episode of Building Success Stories. Are you ready to take your business to the next level? I've got you covered. Visit my website, AnnDonnellySuccessStories.com, to access additional resources and sign up for my newsletter. And to work with me directly, visit AnnDonnelly.com to learn more about my services as a fractional COO and business consultant. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform and never miss an episode. Until next time, keep building your success story.